to be gentle on yourself and manage your expectations and let yourself make a few mistakes over time, you know, because I think the biggest mistakes that you're going to make in your career are not going to be clinical mistakes.
Welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast. I'm David Keir. In this episode, we sit down with Brett Chernin. You probably know the name Brett Chernin because we've had him on the Prime Head Start segment a couple of times and we'll have him a couple of times more. Brett is a trainer with Prime Practice. He's their general manager of customer relationships and he's been with them for 17 years. It's actually a fascinating story how he got to start working with them, to start working with dentists and to meet Philip, the owner. It's really great and we get into that in this chat. Now, you might be asking, why are we interviewing someone who's not a dentist? And I think this is a fascinating discussion because Brett is someone who coaches dentists. He helps them with their business, their leadership, and their communication. And he teaches a lot of these courses as well as being direct with customers as a coach. But his history before that was in coaching as a personal trainer and in nutrition. His insights from that world and before he got into dentistry have really helped him in this dental coaching career. Now, in this chat, we talk about his life and his journey to working with Prime Practice. We talk about the areas that he thinks people should focus on or leaders should focus on, which is leadership, business, and their communication skills in dentistry. Brett shares some of the common mistakes he sees new graduates and dentists in general making. And this is something I think is useful because he talks with so many of us from the perspective of a non-dentist. And that is a useful thing when we can't see the forest through the trees. We talk about his advice for graduates and his skills and things that he thinks graduates lack or are good at and that might help them in their future. And then we even talk a little bit about something I was thinking about improving. I don't know how this really came up, but his coaching skills just jumped on it. And he messaged me the Monday afterwards and I did do what I said. but it was great to have that accountability and it shows how coaching is a useful tool. Hang around for the end of this podcast because we have a Prime Head Start segment. This is also with Brett and it's about polite evasion or I'll think about it. I'm sure you've heard about that before and it's good to hear his views on that opinion. And as always, thank you to our supporters and sponsors of the Dental Head Start podcast and dental students and graduates, BOQ Specialist, Restoring Excellence and Prime Practice. Enjoy the interview. Being a student is pretty tough. The stresses of exams, patient care, and everyday life is enough without having financial stress as well. BOQ Specialist recognizes this. They offer a student package if you're in your last 2 years of dentistry. It's a pretty good package. Actually, I used it myself. They recognize that you don't have much of an income now, but that'll change. They'll give you a credit card and they'll give you an overdraft. And the overdraft, you don't even have to pay back until halfway through your first year after graduation. Now, I'm not recommending you go and spend this money on anything, but if you need it to buy loops or if you need it to get through that final year, they really do have your back. And I know I struggled in that last year financially, and it really helped. So thank you to BOQ Specialists supporting me in my final year for supporting the Dental Head Start podcast. So welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast. Today we have someone who's not a dentist, but he actually knows probably more than you do about the communication, leadership and management side of dentistry. We've got Brett Chernin with us today. How are you, Brett?
Excellent. Thanks for having me, mate.
It's my pleasure. And I want to say, you know, you're not a dentist, and I'll say it from the start, Prime Practice also sponsors us, but that has nothing to do with this because I'm so eager to understand, one, how you got to where you are because I'm pretty fascinated, but also your insights because, you know, we talk with dentists all the time. We get these singular opinions and ideas and all the rest of it, and it's amazing, but from you see lots of dentists. You know, you coach lots of people. You have this exposure that none of us can even comprehend. So I'm really excited for this chat and I'm sure there's going to be some pretty good stuff in there.
Thanks.
So you coach dentists, you train the coaches, you're the general manager of customer relationships at Prime Practice. You've been there since 2003. What I'm interested in is how did you get there and why dentistry? Why Prime Practice?
So I do actually have to get to that point, to 2003, I have to go back further.
Yeah. And we're going to, so go for it.
Okay, good. So I was I was studying my master's in nutrition.
Right, that's a bit different.
Yeah, so I was doing my master's in nutrition and dietetics at the Uni of Wollongong. And when I got to the fourth and fifth year, and there was a lot more sort of prac work and stuff and in the hospitals, I had an opportunity to kind of like step out and do a little bit more work. Like I needed to pay my way through the master's part. And so one of the interesting things for me was that they always used to say, you know, when they're talking about like diet, you know, here's the diet, but it has to be, you know, you have to put that together with, you know, proper exercise. But back then, mind you, I was one male out of, I think there were 25 of us that were doing nutrition and dietetics at the time. I think the ratio has changed these days, but
I studied medical science at Wollongong, and nutrition was part of a little part, and the nutrition people, it was a bit the same. I think there's about two or three males. The rest were the ladies, so yeah, it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, so and that was irrelevant, but anyway, me saying that was irrelevant, but it was just an interesting thing for me as a male being, you know, part of that. Anyway, so I was always curious though, because they would never actually go into why what the exercise was, and I was never really a big exercise guy, you know, like it wasn't a big thing for me. So I ended up doing a course to just like to become a fitness trainer, but it was more about just kind of getting the knowledge.
With the purpose of understanding it, not so,
so
much
if
using
I was going to talk to exactly. But then once I did it, and I just thought it was really great. And one of my good friends was actually a fitness trainer, and he had a company that he ran, and it was all outdoor fitness training. And I was living in Bondi at the time, and you know, I finished the course, and he said, "Look, why don't you come and work for me?" You know, and I thought, "Wow, that was what a great opportunity, you know, to be outdoors, to develop that and to do something that's connected with, you know, exercise and nutrition." And so that sort of started the ball rolling. So there I was doing, you know, I went through, did my master's, started working in private practice as a dietitian, but at the same time I was becoming a really proficient, really great, you know, fitness trainer as well. And because I was male, and I was one of the at the time one of the very few male dietitians out there, and because I also, it's much more common now, but was very uncommon back then, was I also had the combination of the fitness and the nutrition. It kind of gave me a leverage that other people didn't have at the time. So, you know, so I could kind of work with people in private practice, working in a medical center, and I'd work with my clients there on their nutrition and their health, but I also could advise them at least, or even do some exercise sessions in my office there. Or the clients that I had as fitness training clients, I would, you know, be walking and talking, and I could advise them on the nutrition side. So, you know, it was a good.
It's hand in hand. It's perfect.
They worked perfectly. And obviously nowadays most people do it, but, you know, it was kind of unique back then. So the natural flow on from that, and I promise this is all relevant, right? Like it's just like there's an evolution here. So if anyone's listening, it's kind of like stay with me here, right? So what then happened was I had this client who was, you know, like a combo client. And one of the things that I loved about working with people about their health was having conversations with them about the areas of life that were impacting their health. So, you know, that became much more fascinating to me, like as I'd talk to someone about, well, you know, why they were eating what they were eating and why, what was getting in the way of them exercising, you know, regularly, you know. And so I was having these conversations with people about not just their nutrition and their fitness, but also their relationships, their business, their career, their sense of self, their, you know, their self-image. There were all those sorts of things. And at some point, and it's probably about 1998, 1999, so we're going back a way, someone said to me, there's this thing called life coaching, and it's coming, and it's what you do with me, but you need some kind of structure. And so I was like, okay, cool. You know, like I'd never heard of it, life coaching, you know, and I thought, oh, let me try it out. Anyway, long story short, I decided to get coached myself. I had an amazing, you know, if I was like, if I'm going to do this thing called coaching, I got to be coached and experience it so that I know that it's the right thing.
What was that experience like?
Amazing. I mean, that was life changing really for me, you know, like I sat down with this guy who to this day is one of my closest friends, and he just got into my world and asked me what was important to me. He really listened to me. He really cared, and he was looking for the things that in life weren't, not necessarily the things that weren't working, but where were the gaps? What were the things that I had?
What was incongruent?
Yeah, it was an incongruent, and that if it was present in my life, it would actually make a difference. You know, so I'm very happy to share this with you, but it's personal. But like, you know, one of the things he looked in the corner of the room and he said to me, "What's that?" He saw a guitar, and it had no strings on it. And he said to me, "Well, what's with the guitar?" And I was like, "Oh, don't worry about that. I don't have a creative body and, you know, bone in my body." Well, that was like, you know, that was just, he just went straight for that. And it turned out that, you know, like I had this passion for music and for singing that somewhere along the line I'd lost it, you know, and I'd lost connection with it. So we went there, and in the end, we created three goals by the end of that session. One of the goals was to write and play and sing a song for my girlfriend at the time. And so what occurred, I completed that amongst a couple of other goals, but what occurred after that was like, I mean, I've now written tens and tens of songs. In fact, 8 years ago now, for my 40th birthday, I gave myself the gift of producing a CD and launching it at my 40th birthday as a gift to myself and to my friends and family. So that's, you never amazing. Know where those sorts of things are going to kind of flow to, you know. But the point was that after having experienced that, I love this idea of having someone outside me who was supporting me in being the best that I could be. I was like taken by this thing called coaching, which was different to psychology or, you know, a therapist working on problems. It was more about, well, what do I want my life to look like, and what's it going to take to get there? And I was fascinated about, and of course it made sense, but that how we often try to do life on our own. And yet when we have someone else that we can actually share it with, and someone who's partnering us with that and supporting us and yet unattached to that, you know, like just really that's the only agenda is me being the best person, man, you know, whatever in that I want to be, that's an extraordinary opportunity. So coaching for me, I just fell in love with the whole idea of coaching.
I can absolutely hear your passion behind it too. It's actually invigorating. it's funny how it's, so many. Oh, go on.
So I was just going to say that it's an extraordinary relationship that gets created. You know, like when it works really well, it is a very unique and extraordinary relationship. Sorry, and you were going to say.
I was going to say that, you know, we look at all these people who are achieving big things in sport, and they all have coaches. They have like five or six coaches. They even have their psychology mental coach. They have, you know, the Tiger Woods has a swing coach. All the rest, I don't know. I don't do golf. But the point is, we don't expect them to get there without a coach.
That's right.
But then with life, we just think, oh, no, do that on your own.
Correct.
It's a bit crazy. So you fell in love with coaching. Did you then take that, did you switch entirely, or did you slowly go into
that? So eventually, so it was like a no-brainer for me, because I was like, well, why would I be a dietitian and just focus on, you know, food, or why would I be a fitness trainer and just focus on that if I could be at the time it was called a life coach. And in 99, I trained in as one of the first lots of coach training that was ever in Australia. So in 2000, that's when I kind of became a coach, and it was like was a very unique, and it was real grassroots kind of, you know, at the time. And I thought, well, why would I just focus on one area when I could actually support someone in their health and in their business and in their relationship? So it, you know, I very quickly kind of left the medical center and stopped doing the training and just focused on the coaching, because that was just that way I could still be in the health realm, but I could support them holistically.
Yeah, was it something that was the uptake quite quick? Did you become very busy very quickly, or was that something so new at the time that was hard?
I did, but I also got very much into, because I was in the beginning of this business that was really one of the first of its kind in Australia to do coaching and to do coach training. I very naturally got into training other people to become coaches. So that was the start of me becoming a facilitator. You know, I used to run workshops and training, you know, for coaches. So that was that sense of, okay, great working one-on-one and loving being at the front of the room and supporting people to, you know, be as inspired as I was to help other people to have fulfilling lives, right? So I still did a little bit of training, you know, fitness training at the time, and this is my link. Because I promised it.
Yeah.
So one of my clients, one of my fitness training clients, was also an old kind of family friend, and his name was Dr. Philip Palmer.
Indeed, and we do know that name.
We do know that name. So at the time, I don't know if my dates are exactly right, but it, pretty much what was happening for Phil at the time was he was still a dentist working a couple of days a week in a, you know, successful practice in the CBD, Sydney CBD. But he had started this business called Prime Practice. And I remember back then, you know, he and I, we used to walk and talk on Bondi Beach. I always joke in my workshop when I talk about Philip, and I say he was my least successful client. he used to always say that his favorite part of the whole session was when I'd stretch him at the end. You know. Anyway, you know, so we used to talk on Bondi Beach, and I remember him telling me at the time that he was like, it was like a one man band. You know, he was running the workshops, he was coaching people, he was, excuse me, trying to build the business. He was, I think he might have had one other person, admin person helping him or something like that, you know. And then, you know, he took on a coach at some point. And then I remember at some point he said to me, because I was really passionate about coaching, and he looked at me and he's like, Brett, you should come and work for me. I'm like, we're doing the same thing. It's just I'm doing it for dentists and, you know, focusing it on their business skills, but it's coaching. And I remember looking at him and saying to him, Phil, why would I want to work with dentists? Like I just, you know, like – and at the time I was really – I was still looking at like broader kind of picture. I didn't want to go niche, you know, like – and here he was. He'd created this niche of not just – business coaching, because that was starting as well. You know, it was moving from life coaching to business coaching, which was a bit niche. And then he took it a step further, and it was like not just business coaching, but business coaching for dentists and, you know, practice owners, you know. And I wasn't quite ready to go niche. So, you know, I continued to work as a coach for a few years. Sorry, you had a question.
So that was in 2001, was it?
Or, yeah, I think it was around probably about – yeah, it was about, around that. Yeah. Exactly. It was like 2001, 2002. I went traveling in 2003, took a year off, spent 6 months in India, fell in love with a Dutch girl, went and lived in Amsterdam with her for a couple of months. And I was really just kind of, I needed to take a break from the coaching, you know, and get some perspective. And while I was traveling, I got that sense of, I knew I wanted to work in a business with other people. I didn't want to be on my own anymore. I wanted to be with an established business, like someone that, you know, was doing good work already. And I didn't want to be the one that was kind of having to get out there and generate the work. I just wanted to be a great coach and a great trainer. And I had a few people that I had in mind. And the first person, in fact, I emailed Philip when I was still in India. And because I had that insight of like, oh, these are the couple of people that I think are really doing some amazing stuff. And I emailed him and said, look, I'm still traveling, but I'm really curious. And he said, look, let's chat when you get back.
We're going to get right into that. Obviously, that's the key of this. But I want to ask a few little things. It's interesting you made the point, you got to the point where you didn't want to just be doing it all on your own. And I think that's probably something that some dentists struggle with, is when you're in small business or a small practice, you have to do a lot of those extra bits and pieces.
Yeah.
We might get into that a bit later. But I want to ask you about India. What took you to India?
You want the truth. So I was going to get married, and the woman that I was with and I, we had like a fascination, I guess. We'd done a lot of kind of personal development stuff, and some of it was connected with, you know, some kind of people over in India and a community and stuff. And anyway, we had agreed that we were going to have a six-week honeymoon in India, you know. Anyway, the relationship didn't work, but I still really wanted to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was on the radar. Yeah.
It was already there, and I really had this, I had this calling. You know, India is one of those places that some people just, it just calls to some people. And they say of India that it's one of those places if you do go. Have you been?
No, I haven't, but my sister just spent a fair amount of time there. And
it's an amazing place. I mean, I spent 6 months and I only feel like I just touched the surface. You know, every different state is a different climate, different kind of people, different color people, different kind of different religions, different, you know, it's just so diverse. But they say of India that, you know, you'll love her or you'll absolutely hate her. Like she'll push all your buttons anyway. It's the best of the best, right, yeah. And the worst of the worst, you know. And so I kind of just wanted to absorb that. And I'd taken a year off school after I finished, and I sort of traveled a bit, but not a lot. I kind of wanted to take another gap year.
Yeah, you know? I hadn't quite got it out of your system.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. Yeah. I hear you.
In fact, I had two gap years before I fell into the nutrition dietetics. I really felt like that was important for me. So did
I, actually. 2 years. It was meant to be one, but I met my wife, fell in love, and it became two. I asked the question in a way because a lot of people, when they think about life coaching and self-development, all this stuff, we often tie back a little bit to meditation and some self-awareness and things like that. Did that play a role in your India travels or not really?
You know what? I'd deep dived, but probably between 1999 and 2002. Before I went away, that was my deep dive into personal development. I did a lot of courses, and in 1999, over the new year when the world was meant to end, I spent 10 days doing my first ever 10-day Vipassana silent meditation. I've subsequently done three more after that, but that was my first one. And then I did a lot. I could continue to get coached because I just was like, you know, what else can the next coach give me, you know? And I did all sorts of personal development courses. So by the time I went to India, I didn't really feel the need to do that, although I did do some crazy, beautiful, amazing things over there that, you know, that I'm very grateful for, but I didn't have a need. I felt like I'd done quite a lot of work on myself, and actually I just wanted to just be.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
that's beautiful.
Just wanted to spend some time just like being and meeting people and, you know, flowing with life and not having a particular kind of outcome, you know, and not knowing really where I wanted to go, but just being free.
Just going, yeah.
Yeah.
There's something really special about that, and I won't pull any more strings there. I'd love to hear about your silent meditation, but I think the people listening probably want to hear a little bit about your advice and tips and all the rest of it. You were traveling, you know, you contacted Philip again, and then you came back.
Yeah, and you know, I sat down with him and I said, look, I think I'm ready to kind of start with you. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you. And I said, well, but like, surely there's something that I can do. And anyway, he called me back later on and said, oh, come on over and let's see what we can create. Actually, I remember saying to him, surely what, you know, if the stuff that you do could be relevant to other industries. And he said, you know, yeah, I've thought about that, but, you know, so maybe if you want, you know, come in and then see where we might also take this, you know, see if it's applicable to other industries, not just dentistry. So I remember coming in and just it was very I learned very quickly, and I remember saying this to Philip, was that, far out, this is so – there's so much in this just for dentistry. Like there is – and there's so much for me to learn, and I have to like – if I'm going to even think about taking this to another industry, I need to be really good at doing it in one area first. And I think over the 17 years that I've been in Prime now, like, you know, every once in a while we've thought about it and dabbled in some areas or whatever, but the core of our business, you know, training and business solutions for the dental community, it's still like we know we could have a difference in other areas, and there's an arm of our business that has gone into the, you know, supporting vets and practice sales for vets. But the core of our business in terms of training and business solutions, there's still so much opportunity with dentists and dental practices, and, you know.
Mm. And if you focus in that niche the way you guys have, you can be so much better at what you do.
That's what I found.
Instead of being
exactly.
spread to
two things. And that was what the beauty of going from being a life coach who kind of had – I think the thing with life coaches back then was this, the idea that I don't need to be an expert in your area of business or your area of – you know, I just need to be someone who is really good at listening and then hearing what's underneath what you say and asking questions that will make you think about the issue at hand. So they're all questions are always the greatest tool for a coach. And I don't – as most general coaches, life coaches back then, you didn't need to be an expert in the area. You just needed to ask really great questions and help people to come to some insights about an area and then create actions that would make a difference in that particular area. Well, when I came to Prime, I started to recognize that there was an immense value in being really good in a particular area. Like, you know, getting to niche coaching and not just saying I'm a business coach, but I'm a business coach for dentists and dental practices. The more I understood that, the better I got. And the more inspiring and exciting it became. And little did I know that, you know, wow, there's just, you know, dentists are really amazing, fascinating, challenging, confronting people to work with. And I, you know, I put you all into that, you know, that bucket. But, you know, I just love working in this industry. You know, I love working in an industry where the people who do it really are like really committed to supporting people in their long-term oral health.
I can hear your passion, and it's interesting too because you have so much you can give to us from your history. So much of what I heard, of course, the dietetics and then the exercise, but it was actually more the psychology underlying all of that, getting people to exercise, getting people to change their diet, and then working in that general life coaching space, but then bringing a lot of that now to, you know, coaching dentists and dental practices. It makes so much more – it makes sense where you're coming from. Which is great. It's something that – oh, go on, sorry.
I was just going to say that the evolution for me was a really beautiful thing to, like, it's always, I love looking at that evolution and thinking, okay, well, one thing, I never knew that I would lead to here, but the evolution was really just wonderful because I let it flow and one thing led to another. But so it's actually very natural for me to be in this arena.
Yeah, you know? it's a bit woo-woo, but it's almost destiny. You know, the one step gets you to the next step, gets you to you know where you end up, and that's, you have a unique ability to do that.
One of the thoughts that I had there was that one of the things that I thought, because I'd gone from life coaching that was really, you know, working with people on all areas of life, and I kind of felt like I was almost taking a back step by focusing on business coaching and just helping people in their business. But one of the things that I've become really clear about is that when we excel in one area of life, it almost always flows on to another area or other areas of our lives. Yeah. So I was kind of like, even though we focus very much on the business and, you know, and it's business coaching, Even if I'm focusing on communication skills with a new patient in the new patient exam, I know that if that dentist gets better in their business or owning the business or communicating and leading their team or communicating better with their patients, I know absolutely that that will flow on to better communication with their family and friends, better life skills, better relationships, better sense of self. Like, it will have a very clear flow on.
Yeah, it's niche, but it's still, it actually impacts broadly.
Totally.
And it impacts on, you know, your whole life. Happiness, I guess,
yeah,
is the key. I'd love to get into a lot of this stuff. So it's actually fascinating how, you know, you came in very early on in Prime, and Prime's, I guess at the time, was only a couple of staff members. It's up to over 40, I believe.
Yep.
You know, running all sorts of different courses and bits and pieces. But in what you've done with that, a lot of coaching and your experience as a life coach before, I want to get insights in what you see. Just broadly, what do you think are the biggest mistakes dentists make? I know this is really broad, but we'll get a bit more into the specifics. But what are the broad things that people can more simply change that they don't even see they're making?
So I'm going to answer the question by starting with some of the biggest mistakes that I see practice owners make as dentists. Yeah. And I think I would break it down into three areas. One is that they don't work continually on their leadership skills. The second is that they don't work on and focus on their business skills. And the final thing is that they don't work on and continue to develop their communication skills.
Yeah. So, and what I'm hearing, and obviously, is, so what you're saying is dentists who own practices, and this will relate to all of us who are dentists as associates, but we're doing the dentistry and not thinking and taking a step back and working on, you know, the business or on our leadership or on our communication. We're just doing what we do.
Yeah, and I get it, because that's the bit that you're most passionate about. Like, you know, you just, if you could, every dentist would just do the, you know, it's just, give me the dentistry, you know, like, let me have my fingers in there, in that mouth, and like, let me do what I do really well, because that's your purpose. You know, if dentistry is aligned with your purpose and what you were, like, your gift and what you were, you know, what you see is like your greatest gift to be able to share with other people, then, you know, you're inspired to do good work. But then all of a sudden people find themselves as practice owners and recognize that just doing good work is not enough. I mean, of course it relates to anyone who's not an owner as well, because you know that you could be the best clinician in the world, but if you don't have great communication skills, then the patient doesn't get it, and then you won't get a chance to do the work that you love doing that's going to make a difference to the patient anyway, right? But then you add to that, for a new practice owner, not working on the business side of things and not working on the leadership side of things, and then that's a, you know, they're the big mistakes. And to be honest with you, that's like that's they're the three things that we really focus on in our business. That's why people kind of, you know, love working with us, is because they can see that they're the gaps that most dentists have. You know, I talked earlier about dentists don't get in because, you know, into dentistry because they're good communicators. They also don't think to themselves, well, you know, I'm really good in business and I want to create a great business, so I'll get into dentistry.
Yeah, you know? So I'll study for 4 to 7, 5 to 7 years to do dentistry. Yeah. You could just do business. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Or that, you know, or think, oh, I've been a strong leader always, you know, a school captain. I'm a leader, so I'll become a practice owner. You know, it just doesn't happen.
That's something I'd love to tie into a little bit. Leadership. It's something that perhaps we don't think about as much as we should. And even if we are associates, we're still, you know, leading our small part of the team, or our nurse, our reception team. What mistakes do people make with leadership? How do we do that bad? How do we stuff that up?
Well, that's a big question. But I think that part of it is that no matter where we are in life and no matter what our role is not recognizing, the mistake is not recognizing that we have a leadership role at every point in life, you know, and that's really about, and so there's being a leader in my own life, you know, so of myself, and then when we can really own that we start to now sort of say, okay, well, how can I lead other people, you know, if I have a clear vision and there's something that I want to create and I know that I can't do it alone, which you can't in a dental practice, and not just that you shouldn't, but you just can't. You can't do it alone. That if you can't do it alone, then you need to get people to support you. And, of course, then you need to be able to mentor them and, you know, direct them and give them a sense about what good looks like in your world. You know, and that's why, and then think beyond that and think, well, every great leader has someone outside of them helping them to play their game of leadership better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Coming back to that coaching thing, which I think it's something we just don't think about enough, and something I've let go and I've wanted to do for a long time, and I publicly said this and they'll say it again actually that I still haven't, so thank you for reigniting that.
Sure.
With leadership, it sounds a lot like the way we first connect with our patients and how we build trust with them. Do you think they tie together really tightly in that you know, I guess empathy, understanding, supporting, and moving forward from there, would you say?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a great point. I mean, all of the principles still apply. You know, you're leading them, you know, with a vision of that you have for them of long-term oral health and how much that long-term oral health has an impact on their overall sense of well-being, their self-esteem, their relationships, their ability to go for a job, to get an interview, to get, you know, to build a career. I mean, we know that what happens up here in the mouth and how we feel about our smile and our, you know, has an absolute, not just an indirect oral systemic connection, kind of like connection with the rest of the body, but also how we feel about ourselves, you know. So I think every dentist has a responsibility to lead patients in the direction towards that, and that then starts that conversation around leading them to in a way that doesn't have them feel, because there's leaders and then there's leaders, right? I mean, some might say, well, Hitler was a leader, but his vision was one of destruction and hatred, you know. And some people say, oh, well, you know, can't you, and it's a bad analogy, but I think it's like the extreme version, right? But some people will say to me, well, you know, so many people out there, David, who think, who've never done Prime Speak, for example, and yet think that it's all about selling stuff and pushing stuff on patients that they don't need. It's almost always the people who say that are people who've never done it. But there is this sense out there of like, and I think it only comes from a fear of how do I lead my patient towards choosing options that are going to be in their best interest without them feeling like I'm pushing them into that. And that's a very subtle kind of relationship. But the truth is, at the end of the day, we're all leaders. We're all influencers in some way, right? So you and I, we're always influencing people in some way. You and I as husbands are influencing our wives. You know, as fathers, we're influencing our children. And you as a dentist are influencing your patients. A practice owner is influencing their team members. I'm trying to influence young dentists out there to kind of take things on and, you know, try some of the stuff out that we do and do some training. You know, like we're always influencing each other. I have to trust that. Sorry, but I have to trust that the dentists out there that are doing work on this are influencing their patients towards good and not evil. You know, that they have the patient's best interest at heart, and that they're trying to influence patients and lead patients towards what is best for them. Yeah, and if that happens to be good for the dentist as well, so be it.
Yeah, well, exactly. And the thing is, no matter what, yeah, we are leading them to something. So if we're trying not to sell to the point of actually downplaying good treatment, then we're leading them to a poorer a choice we might not make. And if we're letting our patients walk out the door choosing nothing because they didn't trust us because we weren't very good at making a relationship, then we've failed them as well. I think, and I think that's that, it's a paradox almost in this concept or this people often talk about, oh, you know, I hate selling, but in the end, the word doesn't matter. It's still the same thing. If our patients say no because they didn't trust or whatever other reason, then we have let them down in a way. Of course, if they say no and fully understand, that's totally fine. Sure. I feel pretty strongly about that. That people, we have to do our best to get our point across for them to understand what we see.
I was just going to say that I think that's like. That's almost like a relief for some dentists. You know, often I'll say to them, you know what, if you feel like you've done absolutely everything to build trust and highlight the problems and give them sense of ownership and give them control and you've done everything in that process and you get the patient at the end of the appointment, you've done everything you can and they still say, no thanks, I think you should be able to like take a sigh of relief and go, you know what, I did what I could. I've done my job and now I just, you know, at the very least, I hope that they want to continue doing, you know, doing business with you and having a relationship with you and at least coming back for their 012 and their 114. But, you know, like, but you've done your job.
Exactly. And if you do have that mindset and you do your best and all of the rest of it and they say no, it should be just like that's completely fine.
Yep.
Like I don't think twice about that. I think twice when I feel like I've failed to make a connection with the patient and then they've left not fully understanding.
Yep.
So, Brett, you mentioned that we all influence our patients, our family, the people we interact with. And, of course, one of the big things I want to do is to help students and graduates. I want to help them in this transition to private practice and in the early years. What are you seeing with the youngest dentists or the least experienced dentists? And I want to ask the first question is actually what's changed over the last 15 years? What are they doing perhaps better and what are they perhaps making mistakes with relative to, I guess, the generation above?
I think younger dentists are far more aware and savvy of the fact that just having good clinical skills doesn't cut it anymore.
I'm glad to hear that. It's finally filtered through.
Yeah, I really think that you know, when I started sort of 17 years ago, the practice owner's workshop was usually dentists who were kind of, you know, in their sort of 50s or 60s, nearing the end of their career, and recognizing that, like, that something had to change. Otherwise, they were just going to, you know, go downhill. And these days, when we run our practice owners workshop, and we do it literally every month, you know, around the country, I'd say 90% of the participants are young new owners. But, like, you know, some of them, I mean, you'd never have seen it 15, 16 years ago, you know, someone who was kind of 2, 3, 4 years out, like, you know, owning a practice. No chance, you know. But these guys are like, first of all, the money is there for them. Like, you know, there's much easier. I mean, I believe it's like the finance of it is more readily available. And secondly, I think they're just like hungry for it, and they recognize that there are still, even though there's plenty of them out there and there's way more competition, there are still lots of opportunities for young dentists to, you know, build their own, you know, business. And the thing is that I think that desire for autonomy, you know, to be really self-directed is there for most of them. And whilst they kind of know that they've got lots to learn, and if they find a good mentor and a good senior dentist, there's heaps that they can learn. And if they find a good leader as well, they can learn from them as well. But otherwise, you know, what ends up happening is they recognize that actually they've just got to do it themselves, you know. I'm seeing more and more young grads and young dentists coming to Prime Speak, for example, and, you know, saying to me, oh, you know, when I ask them, well, what brought you here, they'd like, you know what, I went to 4 interviews and every single one of them said to me, have you done Prime Speak? You know, and really, like, what they're getting at here, what the owners are getting at here is, I know you've got the clinical skills, but now I need to know that you've also got the communication as well.
The clinical skills are just the entry ticket.
That's right.
It really, the communication is what sets most dentists apart.
Yep. And so that's probably what's shifting now, is that these younger guys and women are recognizing that it is only a part of it, and that while they're passionate about the dentistry, they've actually got to work on these other areas. And the most savvy young dentists are the ones that recognize that they already need to start looking at their business skills as well, even their leadership skills. So they're recognizing that whether they want to be a practice owner one day or not, they still have to be working on – they're still leaders. They still need to work on their communication skills, and they still need to work on their business skills, you know, as in, like, understanding that, you know what, maybe it's okay to have a goal, you know, a production goal, and to work towards that goal, you know, and that of course, if I'm ever going to own a business, the reason I own a business is for it to be profitable, for me to take home, you know, what I need to take home to, you know, sustain my livelihood, and to be able to pay all the suppliers, and to be able to pay all the team that I, you know. So there's nothing wrong with creating a profitable business. But in order to do that, you got to understand how the business works, what the numbers are, and what to do when the numbers aren't playing in your favor.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whole new ballpark for many people. And I think I wonder, and it would be interesting to get statistics and things, but, you know, there's a lot of, you know, hungry young dentists. They're eager to do CPD. They're jumping on, you know, all these courses, bigger courses, but they're also, you know, practices. I've got a few friends who are running practices already, and they're keen. I wonder if it's the exposure now with social media. I wonder if that is something that has pushed more people, or I guess polarized perhaps, and some people are just diving in. We'll soon find out, I guess, with CPD Junkie. This is a website we do to list stuff, and hopefully we'll get some statistics through that. It's pretty interesting. But you brought up something else I want to touch on, which is goal setting. Is that something we should all be doing?
Should you be doing it? I don't know. You know, like you're going to decide. You run your own kind of life. Do I think that it makes a difference? Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, you know, like I can't tell you what you should be doing, but I can tell you that it makes a huge difference. You know, no different, of course, from anything in life. You know, I, as a fitness trainer back in the day, or a dietitian, I could say to someone, okay, let's just, like, you know, run. Or I could say, okay, well, our goal today is to get from, you know, North Bondi to South Bondi. Last time we did it in under, you know, 5 minutes. So let's try to, you know, do it in under 4.5 or whatever, you know, like I know that goals are an interesting thing for all of us, because without goals, there is no possibility of failure, right? I mean, as in, you know, it's kind of safe to live a life without goals, right? Because then you might not miss the goal, and then, you know, but it's...
So a fear of failure might hold us back a little bit,
yeah,
from even setting the goals. That's a really interesting point, and I had never thought of it that way. And it makes sense too. When you define something, when you write it down, you're then committed. But that's both the double-edged sword. It's pros.
That's right. So it could be inspiring for some people, but I also acknowledge for other people it can be confronting, because then it's like, well, if I don't reach the goal, then what does that mean? You know, and of course, the big elephant in the room for most dentists out there, because I can promise you that when I speak to practice owners about creating goals for their associate dentists, their biggest fear is, what are my dentists going to say? And, you know, I don't want them to feel pressured by it, and I don't want them to think it's all about the money, and I don't want them to start over servicing and pressuring patients just so that they can reach their goal. And so it brings up a lot in our industry, you know, this idea of having a production goal. But at the end of the day, if you don't set a goal, how will you know? What's the measure of the kind of work that you want to be doing? You know, and that's what I always come back to with this is, like, you know, if you like doing checkups and cleans every day, and I know there's some dentists out there that like doing it, then, you know, your production goal will be relatively low, you know. But
your goal might be something else, though. It might be, you know, maintaining strong relationships with those loyal patients or
sure,
something.
Sure, but how do you measure that? You know, like, how do you know if you've got strong relationships? Well, then we set a goal.
Measure it by thank you cards.
if only patients were that generous. But, you know, like, and I know some of them are, but it's not a good measure, right? And certainly how you feel anecdotally that appointment went, that's not a good measure of whether, you know, at the end of the day, the good measure, again, so set a goal. If your measure is that you want people to have great oral health, and, you know, then start measuring how many patients are coming back every 6 months for, you know, for the 012 and the 114, you know, like, that's a good measure. So that, but then create a goal around that. And so the only way to do that is to say, okay, well, what am I actually doing? And then, well, what would be a good number to kind of go for that would represent that I'm doing well at communicating this to my patients? So we always talk about this with practice owners, and it's very relevant to all dentists, is that if you are going to create a goal, or if you're looking at KPIs or anything like that, the number is simply a reflection of your leadership, your business skills, your communication skills, your rapport building skills. It's like, well, what does that number tell me about not just my clinical skills, but all the other skills that go into being a dentist in today?
Yeah, it all ties together. You know, everything impacts on that number, if it's, say, it's production or percent booked or whatever number you're looking at.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
And if you're uncomfortable with having a production goal in the beginning, then create goals in other ways, you know, about, you know, create goals around how many, you know, new patients do I want to see this week and how many or this month and how many of the patients that I see do I want leaving with an appointment and how many of those people do I want coming back and, you know, to see me for a checkup and a clean and, you know, so create other goals and then start thinking about what kind of work do I love doing? Do I think is a good reflection of the studies that I did and why I got into dentistry and that is of real value to other people out there? And start creating some goals around those kinds of procedures.
Yeah. That's a good point as well. If you want to get to a certain level or standard or type of dentistry is probably the better word to say, you need to work towards it. You don't just float there and setting some goals around that and perhaps around what you do with your CPD and then around what you implement with from your CPD, et cetera, makes a lot of sense to get you to where you want to go. Otherwise you just float along. They're awesome points.
You can have all the clinical skills in the world. So you could have done the course and, you know, you can now place implants, but you know, if you're going to start like saying, okay, well, what's my measure? Like how many do I want to be doing every month? You know, what would be valuable to me and what, you know, how many did I do last month and how many do I want to do the next month? That would be a real reflection of, you know, that I'm moving towards what's good for me and what's good for my patients.
Yeah, that's great. I think the concept, the way you break it down, it makes me think back to your time doing life coaching and your coaching skills in general, thinking about where you're at, thinking about where you want to get there and how to join the dots, I guess. What other things do you go through or what other things can you share with the community that are listening that would help them with that kind of those concepts in mind, things they might not be doing particularly well or just broad development concepts?
So I've already said, you know, to focus on your communicate, like definitely focus on your ongoing training and development. Yeah. I mean, that's a key. Secondly, seek outside support. You know, and that doesn't have to be us. I mean, it could be that, you know, you get it from your practice owner or a mentor out there, but seek some support.
Have someone else's eyes on what you're doing, get objective opinions.
Yeah, correct. And for those people out there who have done Prime Speak, you know, for me, I mean, we've got this like team of coaches that are amazingly insightful. And it's one thing to come to the workshop and get the knowledge of that from Prime Speak. It's another thing to implement it. And for me, I've just sort of like, I mean, it's such a beast, communication. And I would say that's the main area for most younger dentists to really focus on. So if you want to be a really great communicator and great at building relationships and great at bridging the gap between what patients think they need and what you think they need, then, I can't think of anything more powerful than getting some outside support around that, you know, and being able to really fine-tune something that might not necessarily come naturally to you. Or if it does come naturally to you, looking for the little, what I call the gold nuggets that will just like take it to the next level, yeah?
If it doesn't come naturally to us, do you find and do you see that the people you coach and teach, that they can all learn it? Is there a difference in what they need to do if it doesn't come naturally? And are there things, advice you can give to people who are sitting here thinking, oh, this is like the hardest part of my day?
Mm. Well, look, I wouldn't be a coach if I didn't believe in the potential and possibility for every human being to improve themselves, right? So it's a tough question for me because I think everybody has the capacity. For some people, the journey is going to be tougher than others, you know, because they've got to do some work to either change some habits or shift their mindset. You know, it's just each person has their own, brings their own stuff, you know. And I guess the coach's job is to work out what's your stuff, What's the stuff that's getting in the way of you being the best that you can be? And now let's put some actions in place that are going to shift that, you know. So coaching is not just a good conversation. It's actually about changing behaviors. So I think one of the things that, you know, if I were to share something else that people can look at is, well, I mean, if you're happy with where you're at, then don't change anything. But if you're not happy with the status quo, then don't keep on doing the same thing that you've always done, you know. Start looking at changing something, doing things differently. But remember that change is not like – it's not comfortable for most of us. We like to stay in the comfort zone, you know, but real transformation happens outside of the comfort zone. So given that, if you want to change some things, some people just want to fine-tune things. Other people know that they need massive transformation, you know, like they need to literally throw things on their head, you know. And either way, getting support makes a really big difference. But they have to be willing to make those changes and willing to be uncomfortable and willing to do things differently.
Yeah, that's great. And I guess it all comes back to coaching because it's so clear how useful that is. And one of the things I'm going to add, and I'm sure you completely agree, is if you are someone who has to make a bigger change, finding a mentor or a friend or a coach, whoever it is, gives you accountability. It forces you to actually do what you've said you'll do instead of, you know, telling yourself, oh, I'm going to change this. And, oh, I'm a huge, I do this all the time. I'm meant to be, there's a certain thing I want to change in my treatment planning right now. And it's actually been in my mind for a whole week. And it's just a simple change. And I haven't done it yet because I've got this routine and I haven't told anyone else. And now I'm telling the world. So, So it's instead of putting the photos onto the computer, I want to put it on my computer, draw on them and then send them to the patient. So basically just a way of being able to let them have the resource that I was using to describe what I was talking about.
Okay. Can I just ask you for a minute?
Please.
Yeah. What's stopping you from doing that?
To be honest, I don't even know. It's probably just that it's a different flow of what I do and it's so ingrained. It's just a simple thing. Yeah, having the computer in the room perhaps, it's just changing habit. There's no big barrier, but it's still enough, which is interesting because then if it is a bigger thing, you know, it's even harder. So
So when would you be willing to try it for the first time? Like
Monday.
Monday.
Is that a commitment? Because we're talking about it. It is. I'm going to call you.
Cool. Promise?
Yeah, I do promise actually. One of the things I used as almost an excuse not to do it is I wanted to do it with an automatic Wi-Fi transfer card. And we're getting into details here. I hope people find this useful. But I hadn't bought that. And therefore, I was like, oh, I just won't bother. But the way I transfer to the main computer is by a little SD reader.
Yep.
So I can just do the same thing. Perfect. Do you know what I mean? I've built a barrier, which is not a real barrier.
We'll all have reasons and justifications as to why we can't do something that we know we want to do that will make a difference, you know. And so, you know, I mean, thank you for playing that game with me there. But I was like, I was for real around that, right? Like,
yeah, for you know, sure. You jumped on it.
I can't not as a coach, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And I know you'll contact me on Monday and let me know whether you did it or not. But sometimes what happens is, and that's that whole, I'd like that we go back to, it's about accountability. Unfortunately, we are probably the first people to let ourselves down. Yeah, and if we haven't told, like you said, it's like if I don't tell anyone, then it's much easier to let myself down. But if I declare it to the world, like you just did, or if I just declare it to one other person, and I ask them to hold me accountable for it, and you know, on Monday I'm gonna like send you a text that says, hey, David, how'd you go, you know, with the photos?
Exactly.
Just knowing that that's going to happen is a motivating factor to do it. Now, come Monday, there'll be a couple of things that occur. Either maybe you don't do it and it's like, okay, well, let's have a conversation about what got in the way. Or you did do it and it didn't work. So, all right, so let's talk about what you might do differently next year. Or you did do it and it did work and it's like, okay, well, let's talk about that. Like, what insight did you get? And you say, oh, well, you know, gosh, it really wasn't that hard. I'm like, now the job of a really good coach, if we were working in that relationship, would be to say, okay, well, is that now? Because now we would need to. Just because you've done it once doesn't mean you didn't do it again. So now you've had the insight, you've changed a behavior, you tried it out, but now we need to create a habit. So as your coach, I'd say to you, okay, well, are you committed from now on to do this in this way? And you say yes or no. And I might in the future then continue to check in with you. Excuse me, but after a while, it's just going to be the way you do things.
Yeah, it's that solid accountability at the start, but then setting a goal to do something and going for it and not letting – you can let yourself down, but not letting your coach down. I think that's beautiful, and I don't know how we ended up on that, but I think that was very useful.
I love the fact that we did.
Yeah, exactly, and I saw you just light up. I love it. We are now going to start wrapping up, though. It's obviously been a great chat. I want to ask you a couple of questions that I always ask, and this – remembering we talk mostly – we do this for students and graduates mostly. There's a broad range of people listening, but I want you to think about students and graduates. I want you to think about them all that just graduated, 2019 grads. It's now 2020. What is the one thing — I want this to be a useful tip — that you can tell them or teach them if you could get in the ear of every single graduate? What is the one thing you would teach those people?
Okay, so I'm going to say the thing that just comes to my mind, and then I don't know. What came to me in that moment was to be gentle with yourself. Yeah. And I don't know if that will resonate for everyone, but I think when you come out of university, there's, you know, and you've put so much hard work into it, there can be a lot of pressure on ourselves to produce results, to be good at it already, and, you know, I should be like confident, I should be competent, and, you know, I've passed all my exams and I'm a dentist now, you know. But expectation is the mother of all suffering, and I'm not talking about not setting goals. Of course you should set goals, but also manage your own expectations of yourself, because as a graduate, you just begun. You know, like, yes, it's just the first step. You know, there's like a lifetime here to keep on developing. So when I say be gentle on yourself, I mean take some of the pressure off yourself to, you know, be an amazing dentist straight away. You know, let yourself make some mistakes. And if I've learned anything about dentists is that, you know, I say this in almost every workshop, you guys are hardwired to find problems and fix those problems. And so, you know, and that's what makes you good, because you're looking for, you know, dental problems and how do I fix those? But you're also really good at finding problems in your team and finding problems in yourself and what you didn't do so well, rather than kind of celebrating the successes and the wins. So be gentle on yourself and manage your expectations and let yourself make a few mistakes over time, you know, because I think the biggest mistakes that you're going to make in your career are not going to be clinical mistakes. They're going to be mistakes in communication and human interaction. And I know that may not make sense to some people now, but you will make clinical mistakes. But I, you know, trust that your training and your IQ, you know, that got you to where you got to, you'll be able to fix them. But let yourself make some of those mistakes. But don't forget that some of the biggest mistakes you'll make are actually avoidable if you actually work on the other areas, not just the clinical stuff. So there's a couple of messages in that, but I think be gentle is a good one.
It resonates a lot with me. I tend to share this a bit. I'm pretty, you know, I can be high expectations on myself and then be hard on myself. And I think a lot of us now, this not so much actually, but with the social media and the dentistry that we see, a lot of people do expect to be a certain level a little earlier than is technically possible. And to be kind to yourself means you can be kind to others. If you don't love yourself, you can't love others. All that stuff is really important. And really, I think that resonates with a lot of people. I think it's beautiful advice, because you could have gone into one thing about leadership
one thing about communication, one thing about business, whatever, but that's overarching and critically important. Brett, thank you so much for sharing so much of your time with us today.
My pleasure.
I really got a lot of insights and a little bit of motivation, and I got some homework as well.
You do. bonus.
Which is a pleasure. Yeah, exactly. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You're a student, you're a graduate, and you're looking for the perfect course. I imagine that course, it's going to have passionate, world-renowned speakers. It's going to have tips and techniques that you can implement immediately in your practice. It's going to be in a great place over, say, 2 days so that you can party with your mates that night. You can make a trip out of it if you're traveling. It's going to have some great food and, of course, it's going to have some free drinks. Well, that sounds really good, but I imagine that would be pretty expensive. But it's not. That meeting is actually the Midwinter Meeting by Restoring Excellence held in Sydney this year. That's on June 26th and 27th, and of course it's with Dr. Lincoln Harris. For students, it costs just $79. I don't imagine that would cover the free beer, let alone the food, the speakers, the venue. So it is very generous of them to put this on. If you're a dentist, it costs $250. That is still at least a tenth of what it's worth. I have no doubt this is going to be a fantastic event for students and graduates. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. If you're interested, register at the link in the show notes or find it on the Restoring Excellence homepage. All right, I hope you enjoyed that chat with Brett Chernin, the General Manager of Customer Relationships with Prime Practice. And now we actually have Brett again. We're going to do the Prime Head Start segment. This segment is about when a person says to you, "I'll think about it." And of course, you know, "I'll think about it" is really a polite evasion. It's a polite way of saying no, or it's a polite way of getting out of the room. And there's a lot that goes into that, and there's a lot that goes into it before they say that, that leads them to that statement. Of course, some people will just think about it, and that's fine too. Let's listen to Brett's thoughts on polite evasion. Welcome to the Prime Head Start segment, proudly brought to you by Prime Practice. Today, we have Brett Chernin with us again. How are you today, Brett?
Excellent, thanks. Good morning.
That's great. Now, I want to ask you a question. This one, I think, again, we all hear this. It's something that when we're doing our treatment plans, we're talking with our patients and we get, you know, they're nodding and it all sounds like it's going great. And at the end, they say, "That's good. I'll think about it. I'll call you back," or some other term. How do we manage this? How do we reduce this?
Yeah, it comes up quite often. And first things first, let's be clear, "I'll think about it" means I'm not ready to make a decision right now.
For sure. Yeah.
And so let's also be clear that for some people, they really are not ready to make a decision right now. Yeah. Maybe
as in nothing will change that,
as or in as, yeah, correct, like what I need people, right, yeah, now, yep. What I read right now is a little bit of space. You know, I came in without any pain and no other dentist has ever said this to me, and now you're presenting me with a whole bunch of problems, or just one problem that I never thought was a problem, and it's going to cost a bit and it's going to take something, and I need to think about it. I need to assess, you know, like I need to prioritize some things, and I need to adjust, or, you know, like there's some real reasons why people might need to.
Yeah.
Well, listen, look, I mean, if it's several thousand dollars, I would never spend several thousand dollars without consulting my wife, because that's our agreement, you know. There are some people that would say, you know what, I would need to, I'm interested to do this, but if I was going to spend that kind of money, I'd need to borrow the money, or I'd need to, you know, like if it's a financial thing that, you know, like there are all sorts of considerations that we'd have to someone say, "I'm not ready to kind of completely commit right now." And then there are the other people who you'd have to consider a saying, I'm not ready to make a decision yet. I'm not ready to throw my hat over the line and go with that treatment, because something was missing in this appointment. Yeah, there was something that was missing. So the question now is, well, what was missing? And if you're really good at it, you'll work out and try to work out in the moment, what is it that's missing? You know, and so, you know, you can start to kind of then think about, okay, well, is there some trust? Is the missing in this that is having them feel confident to do the work that is required? Is it just that they don't yet know me and feel trusting? There's a trust between us. And is there something that I could do now? You know, at the end of the appointment, it's pretty tough. You know, so it's more about, well, okay, they didn't accept treatment today, but at the very least, do they like me and do they trust me enough to come back in 6 months' time? And we'll talk again about that particular issue, you know? And then it's almost like an analysis of, well, what could I do the next time to build a bit more trust and rapport with them?
Yeah, so I'm hearing what you're saying is it's actually about the whole appointment. It's not that end conversation that really builds this trust, and also not letting them just disappear. It's, you know, having that recall or hygiene or whatever that might be to keep them in the practice.
Totally. And, you know, anyone who's done PrimeSpeak knows that, you know, the process of seeding, kind of building trust, or creating a sense of ownership and concern about the problems, or giving them control of the decision-making process, that's not something that only happens at the end when you're presenting, you know, solutions. It's like it's something that you're actually working on throughout the entire, you know, examination. And, you know, dentists should take a little bit of pressure off themselves that it all happens at the end. In fact, if it's all happening at the end, that's an issue in itself, because that's just pressure on the dentist and pressure on the patient, you know. So I would break it down to, if you did an analysis, the best thing you can do if they said, I'll think about it, is let it go for then in that moment and think to yourself, okay, well, analyze where did I not build trust with them? Second thing I would look at is, where did they not have a level of concern about the problem enough to have ownership of that problem? So somewhere along the line, I as the dentist didn't highlight the problem enough and, as we say in PrimeSpeak, deepen their concerns for the damaging results of the existing conditions.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, good. so that they can have ownership for a problem that is happening in their mouth and not think it's something that I've just made up. You know, because they're not in pain and it's been like that for years and no other dentist has said that. So, you know, and then the final thing is that level of control. Have I given them a sense of control of the, you know, of the decision-making process? Because at the end of the day, if they feel at any point in the whole appointment that the dentist has been trying to push them into something that they didn't need, or that the patient doesn't feel that they're in control of the decision-making process, they will resist you. And they will say, I'll think about it, just because they can't say, you know, I'm out of control. That's their way of getting control back. It's a great way of retaining, you know, of retaining control or getting it back.
Yeah, it's their polite way of, yeah, they're avoiding, I guess. And that's really good. Those three points, like the building trust, or if you've built enough trust, if your patient's concerned enough about the problem and making sure they still have control, the things we should think about the whole way through. I think that's a great framework. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Brett.
Pleasure.
I've heard that plenty of times before, and it's great to hear Brett's insights on why. It's something that, of course, we can set ourselves up for that if we're not presenting or communicating very well from the get-go. So thanks for sharing that, Brett Chernin. If you want to hear Brett speak more, you can actually hear him at the PrimeSpeak seminar. He's one of the many trainers and they're all fantastic. I worked with others when I was there and I really enjoyed that course. It's one that, as you know, we have that discount code. Go to dentalheadstart.com/primeheadstart to find it, and you'll get 50% off if you're a student or a new graduate dentist, and you'll get 15% off for everyone else. And if you're looking for the PrimeSpeak course, other communication courses, or any course, you'll find them all on cpdjunkie.com.au. It's something I made with Dr. Omid Azami and Dr. Jesse Green. It's so that we can find all the courses when we're searching for CPD, and we can find the right course for what we want. We can also set up alerts, we can record our CPD history, and we can make a wish list. Make an account now, cpdjunkie.com.au, to be the first to be updated with our newsletter, our junkie deals, and our featured courses. We hope this helps the community, and I'd love to hear your feedback. All right, that's it. I hope you enjoyed this. Thank you so much for listening. And if you did enjoy it or if you got value out of this, I'd really appreciate it if you would share this with just one other person or perhaps a whole group of people. I appreciate that because that's how we grow and Dental Head Start and the podcast is growing. So thank you so much for that. Have a great week. We'll see you next episode.